Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another hour of Tribal Wisdom by Bridal Tribe. I am your host, Cynthia Williamson. Happy Wedding Wednesday to you guys. It's always wonderful to be here with you on a Wednesday. It is Wedding Wednesday on Facebook and the Twitter world, so to my Twitter and Facebook family, happy Wedding Wednesday to you, and happy birthday to all of you July birthdays. I didn't realize there were so many, and because I'm going to miss calling out a few names, I may as well just go ahead and get it out of the way right now. So happy birthday to all of our Leos out there. Tonight we're having a continued conversation from last week where we will be talking and chatting with the speakers from the Leti Florence Foundation Sela Conference coming up at the end of August. We started out last week talking with Jeff. Goodness, his name is slipping my mind for some reason. That's because I'm just doing too much. But Jeff Noble was his name. He spoke to us about a number of things, and we touched on a few topics, including neurolinguistic programming and moving the energy around, positive energies around in our body. This week, we're going to be talking with Shannon Shea Meminger, as well as Ernest and Yvette Hudson on family. Family and children. We're going to be discussing with Shay senseless losses, lessons learned from Trayvon Martin. And with the Hudsons, we're going to be addressing physical dysfunction in families and how our children learn about physical fitness and good dietary habits in our home. I'm not going to keep everyone waiting because I see that everyone is on the line right now. I'm going to bring them in right now. Yvette and is everybody here?
Yes, Ernest is here. I'm here.
And this is Shay, and I'm here.
Ah, yay! Shay and Ernest both are on. Yippee. Please, as you heard, I've already introduced you guys on the air a little bit. And I just want to say to those who are listening on the internet, if you'd like to call in and have a question or comment, the number is 347-996-3160. Press the number 1 if you have a question or a comment for either one of our guests. Or, of course, we're just happy to have you listening through the internet. Shay, why don't you introduce yourself? And Ernest, you can definitely join in right behind her, and we can get into the conversation from there.
Okay,
great. Well, hello, everyone out there. My name is Shay, and I am a born and raised resident of Brooklyn. I am also a youth leader at St. Paul Community Baptist Church in East New York, Brooklyn, as well as the site coordinator of Imagine You Freedom School, which is also at the same location. It is a 6-week literacy program that is organized through the Children's Defense Fund, which is a nationally recognized program organized by Marion Wright Edelman, who is well known for her organization around children's advocacy and the rights of poor and disadvantaged people. And so I'm just very happy to be here and be included in the conversation, and I look forward to seeing all of you on the 24th at Cornerstone Baptist Church at 8 a.m.
Wonderful, wonderful. That's a very early hour. I'm already hurting from it. But, you know, we move forward anyway. I'm going to be there like I promised. Ernest, please introduce yourself.
How do you do? My name is Ernest Hudson. I'm a fitness educator. I have been doing exercise science for about, I'll say, 10-plus years and keep it loose. Really, it's been over about 20-some-odd years. And essentially what I do is educate people about the human body, how to better take care of it. I teach a lot of fitness professionals how to work with the average person and help them get certified to become nationally certified personal trainers. I also teach workshops for families so that they can learn more about their bodies, how to teach health and education to their children so the children can be more healthier. And my wife and I actually do that together.
Yay. Wonderful. This is definitely going to be an interesting conversation. I've already had a previous chat with both of you, so I'm excited to have you on the show addressing these two wonderful, wonderful topics. Now, I'm not sure if you know, but our co-host is missing because Audrey Jackson from the Lisa E. Florence Foundation promised to be my co-host tonight, and she is not on the air yet. But when she comes, we're going to lay right into her for fun. But until she gets here, we're going to hold it down. And let's just go ahead and start the conversation about communication, because both of you are really touching on that subject. That's the main subject, about how we communicate with our children, with the children in our families.
Sure. Well, I'll start it from my vantage point. When we look at health and fitness, nobody gave us a book when we were kids to say, here's your body, here's how your body works, here's how best to take care of it, here's how you should exercise. We did some presidential physical fitness in school, et cetera, but nobody really told us about our bodies. And the challenge with that is, if we're not learning from our parents first and foremost, since they're the primary caretakers, how do we learn about the body? So the idea is for parents to begin to have a better conversation with their children about their bodies, but to recognize that the conversation is not just the words I use, but it's what I do with my child, what they watch me eat, that sort of thing, how we actually physically interact. That all goes into it. So when we say communication, it's not just the words you heard me say, but it's also visual. It's also kinesthetic, hands-on, and I think that's a significant thing.
I want to say that I also concur that it's not just the words that we say, it's what we do. And in reference to kind of what I will be speaking about on the 24th in terms of senseless killings and violence in our communities, as I was speaking earlier with Cynthia, it's okay for us as adults and for our parents and youth leaders to let our children know that we're just as confused and angry and upset about the things that are going on in our communities. A lot of times we feel like we need to have all the answers. We need to be able to say, you know, everything's going to be all right, even when we're not confident in that statement ourselves. So it's I feel that it's very important for us as adults and leaders in our community to speak to our children and find out where they are in terms of their feelings and emotions about things that are happening in the community so that we can better address them. Because if we don't understand how they're feeling about it, we're just kind of blindly going on and doing what we think is okay and what we think is best and not really addressing the issues of those who have to grow up in these neighborhoods after we are long gone.
Well, okay, so how do we begin to start these conversations with our children when it comes to either or a topic? For now, why don't we start with the topic of loss? How we can, it's so for some of us, it's easy to say, listen, I don't know either, we're going to be learning together, but what are your suggestions about starting the conversation with our children when it comes to the things that end up in the media that are sensationalized, especially around the topic of loss and the loss of a child or a teenager or a peer?
Well, I think go ahead.
No, that's someone, that's a background. I'm not sure who, but
okay,
go ahead.
Well, I would first say, depending on the age of the child, I would have them either draw or just write exactly what they're feeling. It doesn't worry about punctuation or spelling. Just be as expressive as you can, and then actually sit and take the time to read it and then say, I read what you wrote or I saw what you drew, and I would like to talk to you about what it is that you know, are feeling from this, you know, from your artistic expression or from your words, and kind of process that step by step. And you don't have to, you know, again, say, I know how you're feeling or I understand. It's okay, well let's talk about it. How are you exactly feeling right now at this moment? Are you, you know, do you feel like we should maybe write a letter to the president or write a letter to the family if you know them? Maybe we should go to the store and get a card. You know, so dealing with grief, so sometimes it's those things that we instinctively do. Like when we know of a loved one that has passed away, we get a card for someone, including our kids in that process and helping them to understand that it's okay to grieve. I think will also help them to be able to verbalize exactly what they're feeling.
Excellent. Now, I do see that my co-host is on the air. I'm going to bring her in and have her join the conversation so that we can, you know, go ahead and really, you know, get into the topic of talking with our children and applying different techniques to get them to open up and communicate with us about what they're feeling when it comes to loss. Audrey, are you there?
I'm here. I apologize, but I was rehearsing with the young people for our upcoming event, having such a good time. I had to put them out. But I'm here, and I'm ready.
No. We're going to get you. We already planned that we're just going to go ahead and hold your feet to the fire for being late. So I just hope that you are ready.
Okay.
Stick it to you. But Shay just made an excellent point about application and technique of drawing and writing with our children to help them express what they might be feeling when it comes to loss of a child or a peer or a friend. What are your thoughts on this?
I think those are very good ideas, especially for the younger ones. The drawing can be very helpful, and for the older ones, the writing. I know for my boys, when they experienced the loss of someone, they, you know, a lot of their stuff came out in spoken word or in just some rap type of kind of creation. So definitely, you know, either drawing or writing of some sort is helpful.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Ernest, just give me one second because I believe that this is Yvette that I'm bringing in now, and I want to make sure that she becomes a part of the conversation. Yvette, are you there?
Yes, Yvette? I am.
Oh, okay. Okay, Ernest, you were saying.
Well, I was going to say, I think another part of that that's very significant is for us as parents to be very conscious, in fact, hyper-conscious, of where we are in regards to events that affect our communities or even our lifestyle and how it affects us, be it health, be it negotiating dangerous situations. Mm-hmm. We need to be very conscious as to where we are, because if our children say, here's where I am, if we cannot participate in that conversation because we haven't done an internal accounting of where we are, it's a very difficult conversation to have. In my experience has been in talking to others, a lot of people have not simply asked themselves the hard questions as to where they are with many things in their lives, and therefore it's a harder conversation with their children.
Excellent point. If you're just joining in, we're on the air with the speakers from the Lethe Florence Foundation sellout conference happening in August, at the end of August 23rd, I believe, or 24th?
24.
August 24th, Saturday, August 24th. And one of the speakers, Shannon Shay Memminger, will be speaking with the youth. She'll be running a youth workshop on senseless losses, lessons learned from Trayvon Martin. And we also have Ernest and Yvette Hudson on the line, where we'll be talking about building healthy families. And at this moment, we are discussing different ways of having our children open up to us about what they might be feeling when it comes to the loss of someone special in their life. And Ernest brought up a great point about knowing, engaging where we are, how we feel, so that we can have true participation with our child about these types of events.
I think too, Cynthia, that a piece to what Ernest said is to be open as well. And you may not know where you are, but as long as you're present, you know, so you can don't try to have the answers, because it can be a process where you and the child walk the walk together, and you share where you are, and they share where they are, and you can both kind of exchange emotions on the situation. So I don't necessarily think that you have to fully kind of process all of you, I think it's okay sometimes to just, you know, process with them. And both, you know, this mommy feels the same way as well. You know, I'm still struggling with it or like that. What do you think?
No, I definitely agree with that. I'm thinking about an incident that occurred in the 70s in Los Angeles. I grew up in L.A., and there were a lot of police incidents with young black men. So it was a constant conversation in my household about how to negotiate such things. But many times my father would have to work his thing out as he spoke to my brother and I. And because it was an open and honest conversation, we learned how to have that conversation so that for me as a man, in speaking with other male friends of my age group, I can have a better conversation now. And certainly speaking with my children, it helps phenomenally.
If Yvette, please speak up. I know that you're listening, and I'm sure you have something to say about this particular subject as well.
I'm sorry to catch my breath.
Oh,
I just came in from sleeping, and I'm getting down. So I'm trying to get in and understand what's going on and focus.
Oh.
So, and I'm just getting over a little cold, so I'm trying to make sure I'm up to par. But I will say that in having a conversation with our children, the biggest thing is to be honest and to keep it on their level. When it comes to uncomfortable situations or topics, it is not necessarily easy for you to have the conversation, but it's better to be honest and just keep it on their level. If you answer them, you know, as clear as possible and on their level, they tend to accept it and leave it at that. And as they get older, you can continue the conversations depending on what you're talking about.
Wonderful. So, Shay, since you're going to be running the youth workshop and speaking to our youth on this particular topic, can you just touch on some of the main speaking points?
Sure. Well, some of the things that I know that we will dive into is identifying what is, number one, what do they consider a senseless loss versus a loss that, you know, may make sense or be justified. Because, you know, we all deal with senseless losses in our lives. Recently, my church congregation, we're still kind of struggling and going through the grieving process of one of the elders at our church that was just really beloved, and everyone kind of had a remembrance of him in some respect as either an uncle or a big brother or a son, and he passed away very suddenly, and some of the young people are still dealing with him not being around, to the point where some of them won't go into the office that he used to, you know, work in, or go to certain places, or even go and visit, you know, his children at their home because they're still dealing with the loss. So what does that mean for you? It's definitely one of those things that we will kind of break apart and dissect and look at. And then also, how can we grow from these things, learn from them, and then teach others how to, you know, grieve in a healthy way? Because I think a lot of times, as we've been saying, because we haven't been able or we haven't been brave enough to have the conversation with our young people about loss and grieving, they've internalized it and it's turned into, you know, negative behavior. So we have a lot of angry young people who don't know who have displaced anger and don't know how to express it in a healthy way. So how do we now encourage ourselves and others to look at the grief face on and really deal with it so that we can become, you know, healthy and we can become healed in the process?
Now, I'm not sure that one of you is doing something in the background that's coming through quite loudly. Who can we I don't know if there's the radio on or the internet on, if we could just turn that down a little bit. Audrey, you...
Yes, ma'am.
You heard what Shay just mentioned about processing, helping our youth to process their grief and their anger when it comes to the loss of someone special or even what is considered a senseless loss, and I wanted to get your take on it.
Well, you know, the whole concept of Sela is, the purpose is really gathering to share our stories, and some of the stories that we're going to share are the stories of loss. And in particular, we are remembering in Sela this year the passing of my grandmother and the particular elder that Shay was referencing, because he is, you know, and was the mentor to my boys and just a big brother to me as well. Even though he was younger chronologically than I, he really was a big brother. And one of the things that we have found helpful is just to continue the conversation, to really not be afraid to talk about, oh my goodness, you know, I remember this or I did that, or just to be very present in what you're feeling and share. So really to kind of create an environment in which the children, if it comes up, or the adults, if it comes up, they can share it. You know, sometimes we want people to shut down what they're going through because we're uncomfortable with it, and that's not good. That's not good. So I think the conversation that Shay is about to lead them in and through will be a good one, and they're ready for it because some of them have not had any kind of closure because they're still kind of like, what do you mean he's not here? You know, just as I'm sure Trayvon's parents are sometimes, you know, going past this room, like, oh my goodness, oh, I forgot. You know? So it's just to create an environment where the children and all involved know it's okay. And how do you handle that? What do you do with what you're feeling? Because, you know, we don't want that to turn into negativity. You know, if you bottle that up, it has to express itself some way.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that's negatively if we don't allow, you know, we don't let people know that there is a safe space and it's okay to be angry and to be hurt and lost and whatever the words are, you know, whatever the emotions are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that the conference is about creating a safe space for people to come together and really express themselves, and especially for our youth to come and say, you know, although it's no longer in the media, we're still dealing with this. And although it might have quieted down at church, we're still dealing with the loss of this person who was in our life.
Right.
So I do
very
like that
much.
Aspect of having a very safe place to come and express themselves. Now, Shay, you mentioned something that was very interesting to me, that you already had certain writings, that some things that kids had written down.
Yes.
And I was hoping that you'd be able to share some of that with us.
And I did bring some. As I stated earlier, I'm the site coordinator of Imagining Freedom School. And nationally, all freedom schools all over the country, which are about 250 of them all over the country, we have been focusing our national social action project this year on gun violence in particular. And it was just really kind of interesting with me being asked to facilitate the workshop in August, and then also with the young people, which we have 165 enrolled in our Freedom School this summer. And all of them have written things about gun violence and how they've been affected, and even have written some tips for President Obama to use to eradicate gun violence. So I brought a couple, and I just wanted to read a few excerpts from them. Our program is from age 4 to age 13, so we have some preschoolers up to 8th graders. So the writings are pretty they're pretty in depth for even just, you know, the age group that we have. And one of them, I will just read it right now. It's from a young man, his name is Joshua, and he says, "Dear Mr. President, guns have caused major problems in our community and around the United States. I don't like guns because they killed my cousin. All of us kids and teens are a big target when it comes to gun violence. A child or a teen either dies or gets injured from guns every minute. I strongly suggest a safe way to deal with guns. As president, you can help end this tragic problem that has been going on for years. In fact, over the past 50 years, 3 times more children and teens have died from guns in America. No more guns. No more guns, please, Mr. President Barack Obama. Sincerely, Joshua. And he is in 4th grade. And I'll just read one more.
Okay.
And this young woman, she is in 2nd grade. And she says, "Dear President Obama, please tell everyone that gun violence is hurting other people, and I am sad that other people are dying. Gun violence affects our communities and people around us. Martin Luther King died from gun violence, and some people die from guns 5 or 10 seconds fast. Some people kill people for no reason. Black people and white people kill each other, and white people kill black people, just like Trayvon Martin got killed by George Zimmerman. Guns kill people, and it's very, very bad. Thank you." And that's from Kiara, and she's in 2nd grade.
Now, I'm taking that this is one of the applications that you're talking about when you say these children who have been affected, directly affected by gun violence, you sit them down and have them write these letters in order to help them express, and then you can start opening the conversation about how they deal with what has happened in their lives?
Yes. So everyone has been affected by gun violence, whether it's been personally or just on the peripheral. We all have known someone who has been killed or injured by guns. Living in New York City, some of us have heard gunshots in the middle of the night, or even, you know, in recent years in broad daylight. And, you know, it's something that I know I will never get used to. I will never get used to hearing about someone being injured or killed by a gun. So them writing and them being able to say, even though I don't know President Barack Obama personally, or I don't know my state senator, that I'm going to write to them because I feel it's just that important for me to say that gun violence needs to stop. That these are some ways that I, as a young child, think that we can stop gun violence, you know, or even just help other people who have been affected by gun violence. So it's definitely a way for young people to feel like they have a voice. And I think a lot of times when we are grieving or we have been affected by violence and senseless losses, we feel like our voice has been taken away, that we don't have a voice. We're not able to speak because of the sense of loss that we have, or confusion, or even the anger. We're not able to fully express it. So with them being able to just put pen to paper and say, you know, it's not right, it's very bad, you know, and even one of the papers that I was looking through in preparing for this evening's conversation, one of the young men wrote very, very bad, I think at least 16 times in his letter, because that's just how much he wanted President Obama to know that gun violence was bad. So that's definitely a way for us to get young people to look at where they are and how they're feeling about the situation.
All right. I want to stop for a minute because we did have a listener send me a message that this weekend there is a march, Love Yourself, Stop the Violence, Peace March, this Saturday at 2 p.m. at Restoration Plaza in Brooklyn, hosted by Jeffrey Davis. And there are going to be photos displayed by Ian Lynn. And for those of you who are listening who are in the New York area who would like to participate, please do show up at the Restoration Plaza, 2 p.m. this Saturday, for the Love Yourself, Stop the Violence, Peace March. And I think that you can get more information. And hopefully, please send me more the link. If there's a link that someone can go to get more information about that, please post it in the event, and I'm happy to share it with the listeners. Wow. So, again, this is the topic that will be discussed on at the CELA conference for the youth workshop, and they will be able to go home with these letters, or what's going to happen when you're talking with them? I mean, I don't want you to give away everything, but part of the exercises that you'll be having them do, they're going to be able to take this home, or they're going to be able to express in art. What's going to happen?
I think we're going to do a myriad of different things, because everyone expresses themselves in different ways. So we will be exposing them to a variety of ways that they can also take things home, but then learn some tools that they can do in their own private time, share with their families and their friends. So there will be writing, there will be drawing, there will be role playing, there will be, you know, just being expressive, even just sitting silently and you know, in a meditative state, breathing in, listening to your body and your inner voice, and being present in your feelings. Because a lot of times, young people and adults as well, we go so much that we don't take the time to listen to what our bodies and what our inner voice is saying and really tap into what we're feeling. A lot of times we say we're okay, but we're hurting inside. And, you know, young people are told you're supposed to be seen and not heard, so they're not given the opportunity to say, I'm in pain. You know, so we're going to give them the opportunity to really express in a creative way, in a positive way, and in a healing way, how they're feeling and how they can help themselves and others to heal in the process.
Okay. I think this is an excellent segue to talking about building healthy families, because what you just said makes complete sense, that, you know, that although they're in emotional pain, it translates to physical pain sometimes, and we have to give our children some outlets and ways to express this that are healthy for them. So I would like to have Ernest now come in and talk about physical fitness and how that affects their emotional and mental well-being, and how we teach them to use this as an outlet in our homes.
Sure. I think most of us are pretty familiar with just the idea of when we're active, when we're more physical, we tend to feel better, we tend to feel more excited. And one of the major reasons for that is when we're more physical with our bodies, literally there are chemicals in the body that get the body excited, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are not, it's not even I think, scientifically it's shown people are not physical enough. It's evident by the fact that we have rising obesity in every segment of the population. We have all various different diseases, diabetes, et cetera, at all ages. In fact, the most recent stats coming out are showing that children between the ages of 2 and 9 are now getting what's called type 2 diabetes, which was once called adult onset diabetes. But due to the rise of obesity in children, heart-related ailments, and a lot of it comes from lack of physical activity, lack of just being involved doing things. In fact, 2 years ago, I was an adjunct at York College, and one of the things I was hired to do was work with teachers who did non-physical classes like math and English to teach them physical activity for children so that they could be more physical. The idea is if kids are more physical, or people in general are more physical, the body gets back to a place of balance. Literally, the body wants balance. That's how it heals themselves. And I said a moment ago, the concept of healing ourselves. We heal ourselves by being physically active, and we're not physically active enough. If we can do that and incorporate that more frequently, then we see that there's less incidences of children having shorter attention spans. We have longer lives, generally speaking. There's a more balanced outlook for most things that we deal with. And when they're not physically active, those things get exacerbated.
Excellent. Let's go to that point of because I think this brings this all full circle to what this conference is really about, which is creating balance and healing through each one of the topics that our speakers are going to be talking about and through the workshop. So for you to say that physical fitness is a way for us to help create balance because our body is constantly seeking to have balance, that's serious. And I don't think to hear it, I don't think people actually get it until they actually hear you say that. So what are some of the things that we can talk to our parents about? Because, I mean, clearly at one point our parents used to be very physical. I'm not saying fit, but always at least very physical because they had to go through, you know, high school. And, you know, of course, life happens and we get very busy with children and work and so on and so on. How do we get our families to come together again to really set aside time to pass these things along, to always be together when it comes to showing that we can do this as a family? You know, we can be physically fit as a family.
Sure. I think the conversation starts as we're having it now. People becoming more conscious and aware. And I think people need to be aware of something in particular. The truth of the matter is, physical fitness in American culture only affects a very small percentage of the population. So there's usually only about 14% of the American public actually have a gym membership that they're utilizing on a regular basis. It has historically always been that way. So the concept that at once upon a time we had more physical fitness in classes, in elementary, high school, et cetera, while we had the classes, the truth is people were not participating. That's the actual reality that we have as a nation. That's why they came up with the physical fitness education programs, the presidential physical fitness programs, because people were not being active. I think the conversation starts no different than how we tell our child to brush their teeth in the morning, to comb their hair in the morning. In my fantasy world, I think everybody teaches their child to wake up and do 10 push-ups, 10 crunches, 10 squats, and brush their teeth and comb their hair, so that it's so much a part of the psyche of just the experience of getting up in the morning that it becomes second nature.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is we haven't taught that to our children, to treat their bodies as if it's something they need to take care of. In fact, nobody taught us, generally speaking.
Isn't that interesting? 10 squats, 10 push-ups, brush your teeth, get dressed, go to school. I love it.
That sounds very much like, you know, like an army barrack. It's kind of scary to me, but.
and it doesn't have to be that. I think that, like, I think about my son when he was a teenager. When Ernest was 14, he's Ernest the third. When Ernest was 14, he would often forget to brush his teeth. And part of the reason why is he didn't actually get the reason why he needed to brush his teeth in the first place. Now, I go, well, dude, it's your hygiene. It's health. You should, you know, you're about to become a teenager. Don't you want your teeth clean? And until we actually have the conversation and talk to him about dating and things of that nature, it wasn't important because I actually hadn't explained it to him prior to that. I just said, this is what you're supposed to do. Do it. When we started having the conversation, the necessity of doing it, and now we actually have conversations regarding physical fitness, it's made a major difference in terms of how he approaches fitness. And I think it doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be militaristic. It just has to be something that we take for second nature. It's got to be a lifestyle. We have to perceive fitness, and I would even go as far as say health, as a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the foods we eat, how we interact in dangerous situations, how we move our bodies, how we communicate with our loved ones, it's all about health, having a healthy self.
You know, Cynthia, just as a point to what Ernest is talking about and having it being kind of the norm, Yvette teaches two classes at the Y out here in Brooklyn on Jamaica, North Brooklyn Y.
Mm-hmm.
So she has encouraged me to take her classes. And one of the things I recognized at this Y, and I was sharing her because her class is on Tuesday, I shared with her yesterday, I recognized that these were families that were coming into in the Y.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was mom and dad and the children. And please understand, one particular mom came with her toddler. And mm-hmm. she walked into the spin room and she put her down on the table. She gave her a cell phone, which she was using as if she knew what she was doing. And mom got on the bike.
Right.
You know, or right. there was another class where we were doing, I think it was the full body workout. And, you know, somebody knocked on the door and that was dad. And, you know, he needed to talk to mom about the whole family was at the gym to work out. It is an amazing phenomenon to me. But these Latin, you know, Latinos, and I'm like, okay, so is there a, you know, Ernest, maybe you can talk a little bit about this, is that, is there a different set of values around family and what family do and how family functions that you can
sure.
perceive this in a Spanish community?
Yeah, well, you know, what's interesting is I teach certification courses for personal trainers, and I go into suburban areas. So I'm over in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, et cetera. And you go into the YMCAs, and if you haven't been inside of a YMCA, particularly in a suburb area, it is quite incredible. They have restaurants inside of them. They
oh, wow.
have they have Al-Anon meetings going on. They have churches inside of them. And they have everything that the entire family can need. And when I say the entire family, I mean the grandparents, the parents, the children. There are swim teams. There are karate classes. There are all sorts of things going on, and the idea is to promote this whole family value structure. And so it becomes significantly different in communities within the inner cities that the family is not put to the forefront. And so I think it we have to create venues and vehicles that put it at the forefront to make people cognizant of it. We all have families, but things have become so fragmented that it's not until a major incident occurs that we begin to recognize the importance of family, how much we need that family.
Mm-hmm,
so many people
mm-hmm.
are very individualized. But in other communities, and me going out physically and seeing it, some of these things are put to the forefront. Now, some can say, well, that's an economic gain. There's more money in particular communities because of the fact that there's a higher property value, and so they can build whatever. On one level, that is true. But I'm also from California. And one of the things I recognize in California is even in communities where there's not a lot of money, people are still going out in the parks and doing things as a collective group. It's more of a mindset. So I'm convinced that it's more of teaching the mindset. We see now today in New York, if you go to Highland Park, you'll see the young men out there, when I say young men, I'm speaking of any male 50 and younger, I'm being generous with that, are out there on the bars doing what we call bar work. And you see mm-hmm. the younger men now in teenagers wanting to emulate that behavior because the guys are in good shape and they want to do that. You see women coming out now doing it, and there's no money involved in that. That's just using basic park equipment and doing it, but clearly it's part of the mindset. And I think if we spend a much more concerted time focusing on the mindset, that's what makes the difference when we look at strong families. Mom and dad have to be physical as well as the children.
Well, I know personally there's a couple that have, oh, what was that? There is a couple that I love watching because they're in their 60s now, but what they do is they make sure that at least every day, if not every other day, depending on the weather, they walk together in the park holding hands. And they also make sure that it's a brisk walk. You know, they make sure they do a brisk walk, and then after they do about a 30-minute brisk walk, they hold hands and they talk, and they take the time to connect. So just the process of connecting overall health through family activities is being put together here. First, you know, you having the conversation with your son, having him connect why he needs to do certain things for hygiene and for health so that he understands that it's about longevity and keeping up his physical as well as mental health. And then, of course, being able to have your children and grandchildren see you connect by walking in the park. They can still be, you know, playing in the park while the grandparents, parents, whomever, are physically connecting by walking and talking and holding hands in the park. This it sounds like it's a full circle event when it comes to family health, connecting and creating balance through healing.
Sure.
Yeah,
but most definitely, I think people have to. People often don't remember when we talk about how information is transmitted.
Mm-hmm.
Scientifically, you have three major pathways. The most significant pathway is the visual. People do what they see other people do, particularly if the person was successful. So if I watch somebody work out and they can go do things that I want to do, I will imitate that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
If I see my father, and I did see my father do his push-ups and crunches, I grew up with that visual. So for me, at some point, I said, hey, I want to work out. When I was a teenager, I didn't know what to do. So what did I do? I did what Dad did. Because it had been exampled and role-modeled. I observed it occurring. And I think what you're saying with the walking and other things, that's exactly what we need to see, is these things being role-modeled more so. For myself, with my daughters, I have two young daughters still in the house, we go to the park. And so I play on the bars with them and do physical things. It's not enough just to go to the park and me sit down and watch them play.
Mm-hmm.
I got to play with them. And
mm-hmm.
so even above and beyond just quality time that's spent, they also go, yeah, Dad said be physical, and he's also doing the physicalness. The benefit is I get to grow old gracefully, and that helps everybody all around.
Yes,
that's the reality.
Well, I'd like to add into it, too. I think aside from just the physical, you get to participate in the activity with your child, and they enjoy it, but you also get to learn how they are, not just aside from the physical eating.
Yes, let's talk about food.
Our children have been eating healthy from day one. I don't believe everyone has to do this, but when we had the girls, I decided to make all their food when they started eating. I mean, I made the baby food, and it was always to the best, the kind of food we could have, organic, and, when they started, I've been teaching for a while, and so they would come with me to the gym, and a lot of the times, and still now, they ask, a lot of parents are like, how do you get them to eat that? And it's because that's what they've been eating,
mm-hmm.
they always eat vegetables, they always eat healthy food, and we have to set the tone, and it's not that they don't ask, can I have some candy, because, they're other kids, and they want some candy, but, my question to them is always, what's the nutritional value in it? I know I sound like the, bad guy here, but tell me what, if you can tell me what the nutritional value in it, I will give you a piece of candy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, they know that they can't give me a good answer. So if I choose to give them candy, I'll explain to them it is a treat. This is not something that we would do on a regular basis, and there is no nutritional value. And here are the repercussions if we choose to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And some people would say, well, that's a lot to say to, a 6 and a 9-year-old. But no, we've been having this conversation since they were able. I mean, it's just they know we don't eat that kind of stuff. And that's not to say we don't on occasion splurge or have a, a treat. But they know, in general, what we put in our body so we can have the body we want, what we put in our body is what shows up when we put it in. If we put the junk in, well, here's what's going to come out.
Right.
So, and both of us are physical, so they actually have the visual, the physical, the food. They know how we are. And,
right.
and if you can have everyone in the family doing it, then it becomes easier. It's kind of hard to tell a child not to, and I'll pick one of the villains, not to smoke if you're sitting there smoking a cigarette,
Right.
So it's a similar thing, like, okay, well, you can't have cake, but you sit there and you eat the cake. Well, okay, well, explain to me why it's okay. And then there's certain things as we get older, you don't necessarily have to go there, but it is, they need an explanation. They need to know why they're doing this or why they're not doing that, and it has
mm-hmm.
to make sense, especially on their level. So, I think it's important that you do get down, if you can, and play with them if they're that age. I mean, we have younger children more than most of our friends, but it makes a big difference. It really does make a big difference.
No, you're absolutely right. I do remember even recently I had a talk with my mom about our eating habits, and she says, well, you guys never really grew up on junk, and that's probably why you don't like it. What we call junk food is, a nice little hole-in-the-wall kitchen that makes really good food. We weren't really brought up on the fast food joints that you see today. And when we craved sweets, or, you know, we never craved candy, but we wanted sweets. And I'm a banana pudding kind of child. Because that's what my grandmother made. She made banana pudding and, you know, all butter pound cakes. So they taught us moderation in eating sweet food with actual food that we actually helped them cook in the kitchen. It wasn't something that we actually went and bought from a store. Mm-hmm. When I have a sweet tooth, you best believe I want a carrot cake or a banana pudding, like, quick. And and that's the thing where I have to really make sure that I do in moderation, because I'll sit down and eat a whole cake or a whole tray of banana. You know, I don't even like to share my banana, but don't come near it. So so I think that what you're saying is absolutely true, but with whatever it is that we're teaching our children from a very young age, and what we're putting into their system is what they basically get used to having as they age.
Exactly.
And if they're eating a lot of candy and junk or whatever it is in school, that's how they're going to continue to live their lives and teach their children at some point. Until, as Ernest said, there might be an event that has to make you stop, you know, where you have to kind of unlearn. Now I'm sick. Now I have this particular dis-ease or issue, and I have to retrain my thinking, reprogram myself.
Well, that's, you know, is really the true about, you know, the children mimic what they see. Because, you know, again, Cynthia, almost to the point of what you're saying about, you know, fast food for you wasn't really a McDonald's type thing. It was a nice little hole in the wall that was still giving you a home-cooked meal, but it was just not at home and in smaller portions, you know. So even with my children, you know, there's certain things that they're just kind of beginning to do now, because when they're, you know, when they're looking for a dinner meal, you can't give them, like, fast food, because that's not a dinner meal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so some of that stuff, that's, it really becomes a treat. It's not a way of life for them. You know,
right.
It's a treat. So they have other expectations. And I was just thinking, as Yvette was sharing, that, you know, as I try to change some of the ways that I eat and some of the things that I eat, you know, there was a season where I could purchase certain things and it was safe because they didn't, you know, they didn't eat it. It was mommy's healthy stuff. Now I just bought some, you know, some soy milk, and I don't think I got a cup of it, you know. So all the things I used to purchase, I mean, foods, drinks, all the things I used to purchase thinking it was safe and it's my stuff and nobody would touch it.
Mm-hmm.
No, they now, because I get, they're seeing it, you know what I'm saying? They're seeing
right.
it.
Right.
So it's not even a specialty anymore. It's just, oh, so that's what you purchased this time around? Okay, so we'll drink that or we'll eat
right.
that.
Right. No, it's so true. I know that just thinking about what everyone is saying here, that it does kind of work its way back, because my parents taught us to eat well. And then, you know, as a teenager, I started juicing, you know, just for fun, because it was something that I saw on television. And, you know, I started juicing a lot of stuff. And, of course, that when you're a teenager doing stuff like that, your parents think that you started some new crazy diet, you know. That you have no business in it. Oh, what are you doing now? Why can't you just eat food? You know, my parents are Southern, so they believe in feeding children. You don't drink something and walk away. So if you don't eat a plate of food, there is a problem in the household. But about maybe a year into the juicing, and of course, you know, I also ate and I was very physically, you know, physical and physically fit. I guess the news came on and they talked about this new phenomenon called juicing. And my mom was like, you know, why don't you give me some of that juice you're making? And I'm like, it's going to cost you, lady, you know, because you gave me grief about it. Now I have to charge you. So it does come full circle once again that however things evolve, how health and physical fitness evolve through time, we can actually go back and show our parents something new, whether it be in eating or in being physical. Is this true, Ernest?
You know, I think most definitely that it cuts both ways. I think back to when I was a child, I literally remember my father walking in the door one day, I was probably like 6 or 7, and him going, okay, throw all the bologna out. And my mother was going, wait a minute, we're going to do what? And she said, no, throw the bologna out, get rid of the white bread, we're not eating that stuff anymore. And because my parents are only 20 years, somewhere around 20 years older than me, so I got a chance to kind of watch them grow up and watch them change dietary habits, their physical fitness habits, their approach to communication, and watch them just kind of grow and develop. And what that allowed me to do was then say, okay, I'm entitled to now grow and develop and make adjustments as I go through my life. And what's interesting now is I can go back to my father and introduce him to things.
Right.
Say, hey, Dad, check this out or try that out. And I think it speaks to, again, when we say a healthy family.
Yes.
The fact that now, as an adult male, my father and I can have a conversation about prostate health such other thing and have an open and honest conversation about that. But the truth is we've been talking about this my entire life, and I in turn now speak with my son about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's healing all the way around.
Yes.
Just because it's happening.
I love it. Now, I just want to stop for a second to let our listeners know that there are only like 3 minutes left in the show. I warned you guys that it was going to go fast. I'm sure you guys are like, what, really? There's only 3 minutes left in the show, but of course we always go over. I anticipated that we're going to be talking for past the hour. But if you're listening on the internet, you want to call in. The number is 347-996-3160, because at the end of the hour, the show cuts off on the internet and you will miss everything else that we are saying. So you want to call in now to be able to continue to listen in on the conversation or to even join into the conversation. You can call that number and press 1 to let me know that you want to speak. Right now, because we're talking about family and loving of ourselves, I see that we have a caller on the line. And I want to bring the caller in to have a comment. You're on the air with Tribal Wisdom. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? How are you?
I'm good. How are
Hi.
You?
I'm fine. I'm Monique Mental. I'm calling from the James E. Davis Self-Violence Foundation in Brooklyn, New York. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in. Monique, I know that... Go on.
No, I'm listening.
No, I know that we had one of the listeners send in a message about the event that's happening this weekend. That's going to be a Love Yourself March.
Yes, yes. This Saturday, August the 3rd at 2 p.m., we are having the 20th anniversary of the Love Yourself, Stop the Violence Walk.
Mm-hmm.
It's in memory of Councilman James E. Davis, who was a police officer who was assassinated in City Hall, July 23rd, 2003. And he started the Love Yourself, Stop the Violence peace movement back 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So his family continued the foundation and it continued the movement. So this Saturday marks the 20th anniversary. And it starts at 2 p.m. and it concludes at 4 p.m. And it starts at Fulton Street and Nelson Avenue. It's a 1 mile walk, which ends at the James E. Davis Multicultural Museum of Peace, which is on Brooklyn Avenue between Union Street and Eastern Parkway. We have celebrity guest Melba Moore, boxing great mom Juan LaPuerte, and a host of other people that will be out to support the cause for the community. And we invite all to attend, because what we're trying to bring awareness to is gun violence and to bring community as a whole so they'll know that there are strength in numbers when it comes to our people and our community.
Wonderful, wonderful. If you're just tuning in now, if you just called in and listening via telephone, we have four wonderful guests on right now on the air with us. We're speaking my co-host, the founder of Lethe Florence Foundation, R.G. Jackson, who's put together this wonderful event starting on August 24th, 2013, Saturday, August 24th at Cornerstone Baptist Church, the Stella Conference, Helping Families Heal. We have
Three of the guests on, we have Ernest and Yvette Hudson talking about building healthy families. We also have Shannon Shea Meminger, who's also talking about senseless loss, lessons learned from Trayvon. And as you have just heard, we are listening to, I believe it's the assistant of Jeffrey Davis, talk about the walk that's happening this Saturday, the Love Yourself, Stop the Violence walk, happening this Saturday at 2 p.m. Starting where again? Where is it going to begin?
On Notion Avenue,
mm-hmm.
on Fulton Street. You can take the A train to Notion Avenue. You can take the 25 bus to Fulton Street and Notion Avenue. You
mm-hmm.
can take the 43 bus to on Fulton Street and Bedford Avenue or walk one block. Or you can take the number 3 train to Notion Avenue to Eastern Parkway and walk 3 blocks down.
Wonderful, wonderful. We are so happy to be able to bring these events to your attention. I hope that you guys will go out and support the walk, as well as, we have to talk about where we can find everyone. I am posting the Facebook event of the Love Yourself, Stop the Violence walk in the Facebook event. And Ernest, why don't you tell us about your Facebook page? I think you call it, it's Anatomatrix, correct?
Yes, yes. It's Anatomatrix Fitness, which is a combination of anatomy and matrix. Just because I when I set the company up, the idea was to, from the onset, try to teach not just fitness professionals, but the average person, just about the matrix of the human body. So when you go to the page on Facebook, the best way to get it, if you can't find it directly, you can go to www.facebook.com/myfitnessteacher. That'll take you directly to the page. And as you go there, you'll see motivational things, pictures of Bruce Lee, videos, et cetera, about working out and that sort of thing. Sometimes there's advice about working out, but what I'm finding is people tend to want to be more motivated. It's not so much the exercise that they don't know how to do. It's to find the time to do the exercise. And so I tend to spend more focus on that at that particular page. And then there's also a website, anatomatrix.com.
Mm-hmm.
And at the website, what I have is a series of workshops. And so currently we have one called Human Movement Observation, which is more for people who want to learn how to write exercise programs and that sort of thing. But we're expanding that out to do more family-oriented stuff. And so that material should be there soon. As well as, right now I'm speaking with someone about coming up with some things because of the events surrounding Trayvon, coming up with some things to actually address how do our sons actually negotiate such situations better so that they can actually survive them. So we're really looking at trying to come up with something that deals not just with the matrix of the human body, but just matrix of health and all aspects of our lives. And how we stay healthy and keep healing.
I love it. I love it. I love that one of the most poignant things that was said tonight was that a conversation is not about words, but about what we do. And each one of these speakers is really putting together programs that really help families connect with one another. And again, I'm so grateful to have each of them on discussing some of their techniques and what they're having. I'm sorry, I keep hearing it's somebody starting a bath or something. I hear bath water back there. I don't know what's going on with some of my callers, but it's getting interesting on the line.
What happens when you deal with families?
This is true. We've got families on the line here and people with children, so it's very busy. And I just love to hear these signs of life on the call. Yvette, you will be the one speaking at the event. Why don't you give us hello? What was that?
Can you hear? Oh, you know, Yvette? I think her speaker. No, I think her thing just.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
At the event, Ernest is actually going to be the speaker, even though he won't be physically there. I'll be, taking the questions because he cannot take the questions because he will be teaching, actually, at that same time he's speaking. So we won't be together. We'll be together in spirit, but we won't be together in physicality.
Okay.
But obviously we are sticking together because we believe in the same thing. You know, my focus is as much of the family. I really like to focus on the children. When I started fitness, I would say I didn't think fitness. I started when I was younger because you kind of outgrow the teens when you get out of high school. So you, at least back then, I won't say how far back then, but back then. So what do you do when you're no longer team ability, and you want to stay fit, or you like what you were doing on the team or something like that. So I started working out on my own. I know for me, it was a mental thing as much as it was physical. Mm-hmm. Now I look at these children, and I've been doing it for 20 plus years. And funny, I'll be in the gym with some teenagers, and they'll, you know, wow, you're really fit, and talk to me about what they're doing. And then I tell them how long I've been working out, and they go, wow, I hope to be like you when I'm older. And I go, well, yeah, this really kept me sane when I was going through stuff. You know,
right.
It really did. It was like, you know, where some people turn to the, you know, not so good things, I turned to working out. It was my saving grace. So, you know, I look at the younger kids now, aside from the physicality and the eating and everything. So, you know, I really am passionate about getting these kids out and doing things. And if it's not in a gym setting, because most kids don't want to go to a gym. Well, what can we do to get them moving? What can we do to have them see that spinach is really not a bad thing, you know, and maybe get it to taste a way that they might enjoy it. And if not spinach, with something that they will enjoy, but that they, you know, that they realize that they can affect their lives, not just physically, but mentally, if they are doing things that are good for them overall.
Right.
So, you know, with Ernest and I working together doing the family, I'm really excited because it's important. He told you a story about his dad. Well, my dad, he was vegan I don't think anybody knew what vegan was.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, soy burgers are really great now, let me tell you, because they were not back in the day.
They were tall.
Like cardboard. Oh, yeah, it was like cardboard. And it was like, and my dad would tell me, this is like a burger. And I'd go, no, you know, that's not a burger. That's cardboard. But, you know, I saw him going through different changes. My father used to walk over the Brooklyn Bridge on a regular basis because we lived in that area. He was always running. He was doing, you know, he was always doing stuff. And he opened my eyes. I mean, like, you know, he introduced me. When we go out to eat, if we could go out to eat, I couldn't always have the same thing. I had to try something different. You know, so he opened my eyes to being open to new and different and better. So, you know, just having the ability to share experiences with the younger people as well as their, you know, their adults in their lives, you know, because maybe you're not exposed to it, so you don't understand how it could be different.
Right.
Just
right.
Having exposure. I mean, and that's really big. I used to teach. I'm a trained high school math teacher, and that was a lot of conversation outside of my math classes. I would have conversation with the teenagers, you know, during breaks or after school. And it's really listening to them and then them asking, well, what are you, how come? And usually it is because they've not been exposed to that they don't even venture.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can, you know, we can expose them to different things, then they have more choices, more options, and they see, you know. And then to see different people, you know, in the community, doing different things. And, you know, yes, I'm a gym goer, but I have a friend who doesn't go to the gym. You know, they like to ride their bikes outside, you know.
Right.
I mean, I have a friend who's a tennis player. You know, I have a friend who, you know, there's just different things. And, you know, my youngest daughter plays hockey. I mean, you know, I don't think I even thought about that when I was younger. But we don't have to be in the box, you know what I mean? So they know that they can do, as we have been told, and we know all these wonderful sayings, but the truth is we can do anything we want to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the family saying, well, how do I get my kid to stop eating McDonald's? Well, we will sit down with you and have a conversation. We have to talk about what's going on in your house.
Right.
What are we doing? And so now how do we change it? and be realistic, and you know, so it's a lot of working together, and that I'm passionate about, because it is really sad to see anywhere from 2 to 5 year old being overweight and obese for mm-hmm. me, and it may not even be that their parents are that way, but you know, appeasing the child, or the child's not getting enough activity going on in their life. We have to stop this, because these kids growing up, they will not get older if they continue to have these things going on. They will to have diseases that are more adult-like, and they will not age.
It's true. I know one of the things, I have a good friend of mine who, you know, when I do work with a trainer and, you know, I have to pay them a certain amount to train with them, and she always says, you know, that's pretty expensive for you to pay that amount just to be with them for an hour. And I'm like, yeah, but I could pay, you know, possibly $100 to spend 1 hour with my trainer, or I could pay $800 in the emergency room, you know, mm-hmm. to the emergency room for, you know, not knowing all the different ways that I could really keep myself healthy.
Right.
And to be able, you know, because when you have a good core of healthy habits, sometimes when you do get injured, you actually heal quicker, you heal better. And that's another conversation that I don't think a lot of people are having, that when you take care of yourself, that sometimes you actually heal faster when,
right.
you know, when injury does occur. So I think, you know, a lot of – go on, Ernest, you were saying?
No, I was just going to kind of parlay off of what you said. That's probably one of the major things I try to teach when I teach classes is there's an old concept which just says heal thyself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really look at the word heal thyself, it's a combination of healthy self.
Mm-hmm.
A healthy self, literally, if you write it out, heal thyself, healthy self. And so when we talk about being physically active and doing activity, the body gets stronger, bigger, faster, whatever the changes it goes through.
Mm-hmm.
When you do have ailments, it is scientifically shown, as you said, you will have less incidence of, say, if a person has a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody works out on a regular basis, if they have a heart attack, less heart tissue will die, because that's what happens in a heart attack. Heart
mm-hmm.
tissue is dying.
Mm-hmm.
You have less heart tissue die, and therefore you have a greater chance of not just survival from the heart attack, but a continued lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
People are not aware of this, and so they just kind of go, oh, you're just being healthy, you're into that health stuff, not realizing that quite literally that's saving your life on a very personal level.
Right.
I had some crazy thing happen. Doctors have no idea what happened about 4 years ago, and I ended up in a hospital, inflamed pancreas. They have no idea why it happened. But
mm-hmm.
because I was so physical going into it,
mm-hmm.
the damage that it would have normally had on my body,
mm-hmm.
it didn't have. And so I made a full recovery in a very short period of time, whereas most African-American men die from it.
Right.
So, you know, that was like, I knew it intellectually, but now I had to experience it. I don't want to experience that again, but I'm able to talk about it because of the physicality and always being physical. So I to this day, I still continue to be physical. But people aren't talking about that, as you said, so people don't know it. They just think it's a head trip. You only do it to look good. Now
right.
you do to have a better quality of life.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, guys, I want to thank you because, of course, like I said, we are way over the hour, and I'm happy about it, actually, because I always have fun past the hour. So, again, I want to thank RG Jackson, my co-host from Lethe Florence Foundation, for inviting these wonderful speakers on the show. I enjoyed it, and I want to invite you guys back. Of course, I'm going to be broadcasting live from the show, so you'll have a chance to talk on the show then as well. But even afterwards, I do hope you guys will come back and share some more of what you're educating families to do, how you're educating families to really become healthier. And Shay, of course, I want you back on because to be able to have or teach parents to really learn to listen to their children and what they're feeling and knowing the signs of certain things is so important. So, again, guys, I do hope you will come back on. Please tell me you're going to come back on.
Oh, definitely.
We
yes,
will.
Yes. Yay.
Thank
Yay.
You for having us.
I've got the Toyota arms up in the air right now. You don't even understand. So, everyone, once again, in collaboration with the Cornerstone Baptist Church, we are doing From Mother to Daughter and Beyond, the Sellout Conference, Helping Family Heal, on Saturday, August 24th, 2013. Please do visit the Lethe Florence Foundation page on Facebook in order to get more information and to get information about purchasing tickets. There's going to be conferences. There's going to be speakers. There's going to be giveaways, gift bags, tasty food, of course, which is the main reason why I'm coming, just so that everyone knows. You know, I know you're thinking something coming for the information, but I'm coming for the food. We do hope to see all of you there. Visit our Facebook page at Animatrix, I believe you said, is it?
Anatomatrix, yes.
Anatomatrix, which I did post the link in the event. So please do go check out the page and follow and like the page as well to get some wonderful information. Follow us on Bridal Tribe or blogtalkradio.com/Bridal Tribe on Facebook to find out about more guest spots, guest speakers. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can let me know as well. You can contact me there. We are a company about love, beauty, marriage, and wedding fun. We do hope that you'll come back and listen to us again next Wedding Wednesday night. We love you so very much. Good night.